All right. Good evening, everyone. This is Rochelle Wilhite, designated broker for Best Choice Realty. We are going to be covering conference call number 10 tonight, which is all about the contract. So this is obviously something that I do like to cover, especially with all the new agents, because we don't have enough time in class to cover a lot of some of the questions that come up on some of the addenda. And so we are going to go over specifically the 22A tonight, the 22D, and the 35, and we might have time to go back into the Form 21 and look at a few things there. So if you have your computer nearby or you can access Express Forms or Matrix or Transaction Desk so you can pull up the forms, that might be helpful. Or after the conference call, if you want to write down those form numbers and then go back in and print them, a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about tonight might make more sense. So let's start with the 22A, which is one of the addenda that's most often debated. Most earnest money disputes come because of the 22A. We have most of the challenges with the contract, at least from the brokerage perspective, because of misunderstandings that happen because of the 22A. So I'm going to spend some time going over that with you, not only on how to fill it out, but some of the commonly asked questions that come up when you use a 22A contingency or a financing addendum in your contract. Now, before we go into that, let me just preface it by saying that, you know, you do, if you are representing a buyer and the buyer needs to get financing, by not including a 22A, you're not representing your buyer well. So if you do have a multiple offer situation where the buyer does have funds and does have the ability to, in essence, waive the financing contingency altogether, I do request that the agents at Best Choice Realty come to me before they go ahead and opt not to include a 22A or in order to get, you know, a multiple offer situation one. There are certain times where it might be appropriate to remove the 22A, but in general practice, when you do not include a 22A financing contingency and your client, your buyer, is indeed getting financing, you may not be practicing real estate correctly. So let's make sure that best practice, 99% of the time or 95% of the time, you're always using on your purchase and sale agreement a 22A financing contingency if your buyer is getting financing. Now, if they're getting cash, you'll replace the 22A with a 22EF. But if they are getting financing, they're putting money down, they're getting a loan from somebody, a 22A is what you want to use. Okay, so that's the addendum number, 22A. Number one, when it says loan application waiver of contingency, so what this agreement is saying is it does need to be filled out correctly. So some agents have sent me purchase and sale agreements to review, and it has not been checked, and that's not proper. You do need to indicate what type of loan that they are getting. Most common, conventional first. Most common FHA, most common VA, but some of the other things that you may want to consider, you may want to check the conventional box or the FHA box. And for example, if you know that the buyer is getting a Washington State Housing Finance grant or they're getting some sort of funds from some source, you may want to go ahead and also check the other box and indicate, you know, funds from a retirement account or something like that, just to alert the seller that you are getting a conventional loan, but part of the funds is also coming from an other source. It could be as simple as maybe the buyer is getting you find out from the lender that they're getting a gift from an inheritance. You may want to indicate that they're getting a conventional loan for the first part, and the other could be something else. Could be a down payment from or a gift from a family member. You could write that in the other section. So whatever application is being taken, whatever you've discussed with the lender, it needs to be conveyed on paper here on the financing contingency. As descriptive as you can be, most of the time, you know, when we write up an offer, I'll know that the client is getting a conventional loan and that they're putting a certain amount of percentage down, but I may not know how the lender is structuring that, and that would be perfectly fine just to select one of the boxes. But I have seen times where people become, you know, hostile, agents become frustrated because, you know, there was knowledge that they were getting the down payment assistance program, but they did not disclose that in the 1A. So you do need to ask where that down payment is coming from. You should ask your buyer, you know, do they have the funds? Where are the funds? If they're getting a 3% down conventional loan, you should do your due diligence and find out where that 3% is coming from. Because it says they're going to make application within 5 days if not filled in, an application means that the buyer has submitted the information to the lender, including their name and their income and their Social Security, and that they are agreeing to pay the price of the entire down payment at closing. So in essence, they have made application and done their due diligence in obtaining or trying to obtain a loan. 1A needs to be taken care of. What that usually means is that during that period of 5 days, I let my buyers know that they have the ability to shop the loan, meaning maybe they've gone with, I'm just going to pick on a lender, there's no rhyme or reason to it, but Bank of America, say that they want to go with their bank. I bank with Bank of America, and so they decide to go get a mortgage loan application, a pre-approval letter from Bank of America, but they want to, now they found a property and now they're excited, maybe they want to shop the interest rate and shop the loan. They have up to 5 days to shop that loan and make a formal application. So whatever you end up sending to the listing agent when you submit the offer, as long as you, like, let's say you change your mind and your buyer finds a better deal somewhere else, and so they want to not go with Bank of America, they want to go with Wells Fargo. As long as it's within the 5 days and you've submitted to the listing agent an updated pre-approval letter from that other lender, and it's within that 5-day period of time, you do not need their approval to switch lenders in that first 5 days of making application for the loan. It just says that an application, full application, must be taken within 5 days after mutual acceptance, including checking the credit, Social Security number, the property address, purchase price, and the loan amount must be established with that loan company or that bank. So as long as that's done, you have fulfilled your part of the agreement on 1A. Now here's where people mess up. They forget to read 1B, which is basically in essence meaning if they don't make application, if they somehow they'd never sent over a pre-approval letter, the buyer never had his credit checked, after 5 days, so on day six, if that has not been done, then the buyer waives the financing contingency. There's nothing I can do. That means the contingency has been waived. They have no way to back out without losing their earnest money using the financing contingency. So be very careful that you read. Make sure that your buyer understands that they can shop the loan, you know, during that 5-day period, but make sure you read 1B to them as well. If the buyer fails to make application for financing for the property within the agreed upon time, then what it means is it's waived. That constitutes a waiver. So make sure they understand that. There are three types of automatic waivers within the financing contingency. When they fail to make application for financing, when they change the loan type without the seller's written consent, and when they change the lender without the seller's written consent after that 5-day period. That could constitute waiver of the financing contingency. And there are some provisions that you will do later on. It discusses how you can change the loan type or how you can change the lender after the 5 days. But if you do not get written consent from the seller, that constitutes waiver of your entire financing contingency. So out of the entire form, be sure that the buyer understands how they waive their contingency automatic. And the automatic waiver is stated in Section 1B, B as in boy. As we move along down the page, a lot of people ask me, well, what does this mean when I have 30 days and the sellers come back and countered us. They want us to get the 3A and right to terminate. They've countered us, and they want us to come and have our termination notice like 21 days. Can I go ahead and have my buyer agree to that? Certainly. But what that means is that after 21 days or after 30 days, as of the contract I'm looking at here tonight, the seller may give notice. They may send over a notice, the right to terminate, and it's called a 22AR, and they have the right to say, we're going to terminate the contract if you do not waive your financing contingency. It's very rare this happens. I would say I'm one of the oddballs out there that will actually use this as a countering point because I want the lenders to stay on track. I never like to see 30 days. I like to keep the lenders moving, you know, especially with appraisals taking longer. I'd rather see that tightened down so that the lender performs faster or attempts to perform faster. Not all the times do they comply with the contract, but in essence, it keeps the deal tighter. So I like to counter, when I'm representing the seller, I do like to counter 3A and see if the buyer can fulfill the financing within a shorter window of time rather than 30 days. However, in today's day when appraisals are taking longer, I'm seeing some dates get extended to even 40 days, 45 days on 3A, and a negotiation that goes on between the buyer and the seller on 3A. But realize that nothing happens unless that notice, unless you receive a notice from 22AR from the seller, and it can be 3 days after delivery of that notice that the seller could terminate, or we could, in essence, waive our financing contingency. Doesn't mean the deal is dead. It just basically means that the seller has the right to terminate, and they could go with a backup offer. They could just terminate and decide not to sell. There's a lot of reasons why the seller may use that 22AR notice, but it is written into 3A. However, this is the part that people get confused about. If you read 3B, the very last sentence, if it's not waived, if the 22AR notice is never sent, read that last sentence, if not waived, the financing contingency shall survive the closing date. So what that means is that the contingency, in essence, the 22A, the financing contingency that says the buyer is going to get a loan with Bank of America, and Bank of America has made application, they didn't change the lender, they didn't change the loan type, the lender was ordering the appraisal, the lender got all of the stuff ready to go, the appraiser came out to the home, and for some reason, the buyer wasn't able to qualify for the loan. The buyer, that contingency, the financing contingency, stays for the entire life, says shall survive the closing date, in fact. So this financing contingency is definitely in the buyer's favor. It's definitely a way that a buyer's earnest money is protected and should be highly considered if you're going to opt not to include a financing contingency because there's a lot of protection for the buyer. However, not so much protection for the seller. So when you're representing a seller, these are some options that you may want to do. You may want to cut some timelines down in Section 2 if you're representing the seller. 2A, I would cut down to 5 days. 2B, I would cut down to 1 day. And like I said, when I represent the seller, I may even cut down number 3A to 21 days just to keep the deal moving along, just to make sure that appraisers are ordered, that loan documents are prepared, that documents are supplied to the originator, that those types of checks are done before the deal gets unraveled. I mean, a lot of times what happens with some of these lenders out there, and lenders are sometimes a pain in my side, but they'll wait till the week before closing, and they're like, oh, crap, something happened here. We actually have to redo, or we have to do a credit rapid rescore. We have to verify this employment thing. That should have been done at the very beginning of the deal. The moment they got the mutual acceptance, they should have verified the income. They should have verified the credit score. Anything that looked incorrect, they should have corrected. But sometimes these lenders wait until like the week before closing to actually start working. And I don't like to see that, especially when you're representing the seller and there's expectations of closing dates and then now you're experiencing extensions. So those are all some three countering points that I see sometimes. If you don't change anything, it's okay. 10-3-3 is written into the contract. Always remember that if you're asking for closing costs, term number 4, that's where you would write that. I am seeing some agents that are using seller will pay closing costs, and they're writing that in on a Form 34. The best place to actually write when a seller is going to pay closing costs is to use the 22A and write in how much closing costs, the exact dollar amount or the percentage in Section 4, not to rewrite this or place it in a different addendum where it becomes confusing. I've seen some agents put it on a Form 34 or on a 22D, and then also put it in Term 4 on 22A, and it's very confusing when you're a broker or when you're an escrow closing company trying to figure out what is the proper amount of closing costs the seller will be paying. Again, we're trying to keep it very clean and tidy with your contracts. Another question I get a lot, in fact, in the last month, a ton, is on 3C on the 22A. 3C says appraisal less than the sales price. Buyer's waiver of financing contingency under this paragraph will, if not filled in, constitute waiver of paragraph 7. In this particular offer I'm looking at, they've selected will not. So they're not making the contingency based on the appraisal. They're just making the contingency based on the timelines and the seller providing 3% in closing costs. It's confusing because it means they constitute waiver. So the default, which is will, the box check, if you don't check the box, is actually in the buyer's favor, not the seller's favor. Will not means that they constitute waiver of paragraph 7. So you want to make sure that your financing contingency, including the appraisal less than the sales price in term 7, is inclusive, that it's protecting the buyer's earnest money in case of a notice of low appraisal, which is coming in at times. However, if you're in a multiple offer situation, you may want to select the box will not, meaning that the appraisal less than the sales price will not constitute waiver. They'll move forward with the transaction, and there'll be some discussion that happens about what to do, but the buyer has the funds to come up with the necessary amount of down that may be needed if the notice of low appraisal comes in. So go ahead and use the default. You know, if you're wondering which box should I check, I can talk with you one-on-one about that. But for the most part, you just need to understand on 3C, the default is more in the buyer's favor. The other one, the will not, is in the seller's favor. And then if it is in the buyer's favor, then we go look at term 7, A, B, and C, and that outlines what happens if an appraisal does not come in at the value, or there's work orders or reconsiderations that need to take place based on the appraisal. Oftentimes I get involved in those types of deals where the appraisal does not come in at the sales price, and there's proper notices that need to be sent over, and there needs to be negotiation between the parties that happens because of this. So for the most part, just go ahead and realize that 22A, the default is what you want, and just make sure your buyers are obtaining loan application from the lender. They can shop, but they need to do it within the 5-day period of time. And then if something changes around the appraisal, or they don't like their lender, or they don't like the loan program, at any point during the transaction, we just need to get the seller's written approval, written consent, that they can switch the loan type of the lender, and that can be done very easily with a notice. And just make sure that they've made application. Okay? That's all I want to cover on 22A. Let's go ahead and go into 22D, D as in dad, and it's the optional clauses. I always want to see 22D with all of our residential purchase and sale agreements. Even vacant land purchase and sale agreements, I'd like to see 22D. And the reason for that is because number one is probably the most important thing that needs to be checked, especially with vacant land. I never want to be representing or have the listing agent represent something that's not correct. It's one of the most debated and most lawsuits happen after the close of escrow. And if we didn't have a 22D, the purchase and sale agreement really does not cover the brokerages if the square footage is off by like 100 feet. Or, you know, on the tax records it said it was 3,000 square feet and it was really 2,500 square feet. By including 22D, the listing broker and selling broker make no representations about the square footage and puts the burden back on the seller and the buyer to make sure that they have verified the square footage to their satisfaction and within that inspection contingency period. So definitely a check box number one. And if that's the only box you check on the entire 22D, so be it. I do like that protection. So 22D is as almost a required addenda that I like to see with our contracts. Number two is probably the most asked question, and I have had to explain this about a bazillion times, and they changed this on the 22D. But basically what this number two says is when you include 22D in the purchase and sale agreement, the title insurance clause that the seller provides in the state of Washington, they'll provide an ALTA form of homeowner's policy, which is actually the better coverage. The ALTA policy is a coverage that protects most of the homeowners in a way that makes the most sense. It's a little bit more expensive than the standard. So ALTA is what is going to be included in the sale unless you check one of the boxes below. So standard is just lower coverage than ALTA, and extended would be greater coverage, but the buyer would have to provide a survey, and there's going to be exemptions and things to consider. So ALTA, I would say 90% of the time buyers use the ALTA policy. Standard owner's policy would usually take place when you're dealing with a foreclosure, a short sale, new construction, certain title situations where you can't provide an ALTA policy, then a standard owner's policy would be okay to have that box checked. And only about 1% of all of the sales in Washington actually have an extended policy. We have two of them right now that we're working on based on, you know, waterfront would be a clue where it goes, where there's tide lands and some things to consider with the policy. And also lots of acreage on a residential property could be an extended policy needed. So again, you might want to talk with your title rep if you have a question on which box or which type of property based on the legal description should I take. Should I take an ALTA, should I get a standard, or should I get extended? All the title companies have a worksheet that they can provide you which explains what's included with the ALTA, standard, or extended. But on number two, if you don't know, the best policy to typically ask for the seller to provide would be the ALTA. So no boxes would be checked in number two. As we go down the line here on 22D, number three, love to include number three. I want to make sure that we have the right to reinspect the property 5 days prior to closing. So to make sure that the seller has complied with paragraph three, meaning that the appliances work. I had a situation where somebody had the garage door became inoperable and somebody had just backed into the garage, you know, between the moving truck, I think, just backed into it and damaged the garage door. And because we did a walkthrough, thank goodness we did, we took advantage of term three, and we did a walkthrough before we closed, I was able to call the listing agent, and the listing agent was able to get a garage door company to come out and fix it. Basically, they had to replace the entire panel, which was very costly. It cost them about $750 just to fix the damage that was done. But that would have been a very frustrating situation if I would have let that go to close. And then the buyers move in and they see this big, huge gouge in their garage door. Luckily for us, we had included 22D, term three, and we did a walkthrough and we were able to deal with that before closing. So I always recommend checking box number three. Box number four, always check. Because we want to make sure that the seller has cleaned the interiors and removed the trash, debris, and rubbish from the property. Again, this is the only way you can hold them accountable to that if you include this clause in the 22D. That could be a walkthrough and you find out they moved all of the property and all of a sudden there's all this junk. There's like a load of garbage that's in the garage that they thought that they could just leave there. Well, if you haven't closed and you did a walkthrough and you see all this garbage, and you call the listing agent, and they say, oh, yeah, we haven't, you know, done a garbage run yet. You could say, hey, we want that garbage run to be done before closing because, you know, in term four, we ask that the debris and the rubbish be removed prior to the buyer taking possession. So that's the only clause that says that in the entire contract. That's why you would check box number 4. Box number 5, I see common mistakes made with term 5, where they check the box number 5, but they don't check any of the other boxes. In essence, you know, somebody messed up, and that's an error on somebody's part. So if you happen to know if it's on sewer, or if it's on septic, or it's on the public water, go ahead and check the appropriate boxes when you represent the buyer. And then if the seller represents it something different, oftentimes what I see is a counteroffer, well, they'll cross something off, for example, and say, we're not on sewer, we're on septic. And then all the parties will need to initial next to that change on term 5. But go ahead and fill out what you know to the best of your knowledge from the MLS, from the listing agreement, or from the MLS sheet that you're looking at when you write the deal. You know, what is it on? Is it on electricity? Is it on natural gas? Is it on the public water, public sewer? There was an instance where we had a deal, you know, go to close, and the buyer calls me after the fact and says, Rochelle, we have a septic tank, not a sewer main. But luckily for us, we had indicated that it was on a septic, but the seller had not included the right forms and taken care of the septic tank, and that was something that had with a cost the seller had to deal with, not the buyer. So luckily for us, we had the appropriate box checked on term 5. So make sure that that's done. And then on term 8, if you have a homeowners association where you want to provide CC&Rs, I rarely see some of these big CC&R companies that they have provided minutes of the meetings. This gives you the way to back out if they don't give you everything you want. But a lot of times people move towards closing after 10 days and there's no way to get some of the operating budgets and things like that. But if you do include term 8 and you check the box, that is a contingency and that is a way for you to back out if there's something that your buyer does not approve of, all inclusive of minutes of the meetings, director's meetings, financial statements, things of that nature. So if you're in a multiple offer situation, be careful because that also can sting you as well. That's a contingency, just like an inspection contingency. You can back out for any reason. If there's CC&Rs and you're not happy with the way the CC&Rs are provided to you, or the buyer is not happy about it, the earnest money will terminate and earnest money will be refunded to the buyer. So it's a way out for the buyer. I always like to have number 10 checked because I want to make sure that all of our buyers have knowledge of home warranty plans in Washington State. There are some great home warranty plans that are available to the buyer and add some additional protection. And there's a one-year home warranty, and you can educate the buyer on cost of how much it's going to be. Home warranties, my two favorite home warranty companies right now are Fidelity and Old Republic. Those are the two home warranty companies that I like to recommend. And if you don't know the costs and what's inclusive of that, sellers shall pay up to, I would put $400. Options to be included, I would make sure that I include all appliances, washer and dryer, refrigerator. Make sure those options are listed there. I even go so far as to say the water heater and the furnace, air conditioner. Make sure you indicate if there's some of those things on the property. Those are the options you want to include. If you do not want to include a home warranty, say the buyer chooses they don't want a home warranty, I still like to have you guys check number 10. And then on D, on the other, right, buyer chooses no home warranty. That way we have done our due diligence, we've educated them on what the home warranty plans are, what they do to provide additional protection for the buyer after the close of escrow, but they choose not to get one. And that way we have something on file in our office that shows that we have asked, we have educated, we have provided the pamphlet if that we have one. You know, there's pamphlets here in our office you can come get for those home warranty plans, but they've chosen not to have a home warranty. Term 11, the most common thing I see in term 11 is agent is related to the buyer. Agent is related to the seller. I'm sorry, listing agent is related to the seller. Things like that. Disclosure points, seller to please leave the Ryan lawnmower at no additional cost to buyer. Some of those kind of things that you have to finesse a little bit with the contract. They don't give you a lot of place to write here, but that's purposely done that way. If you want some additional language to put into your purchase and sale agreement, this is where you would write it, is in the Term 11 Other section. And I'm running out of time, and I didn't get to the 35, which is fine. We'll go ahead and cover that next week. We'll cover Form 35, and let me look and see here. On the purchase and sale agreement itself, let me just point out a few other things that I see mistakes made a lot about. On the Form 21, specifically, and Form 28, a lot of people are forgetting to check the box on who holds the earnest money. I would say 95% of the time I want to see on Term 7 the closing agent holds the earnest money, not the selling firm. If you have an agent who's being really firm with you and says, well, I want the selling firm to hold the earnest money, that needs to be changed. We need to do up an addendum and change it to closing agent. Also on Term 10, I'd like to see more from you guys on number 10. I'm seeing the company, but let's be more specific on who at the company is going to be handling the closing or the escrow. It all comes down to having a good escrow closer, and I'm seeing a lot of companies, and I've been very frustrated with some of these companies out there, and it really comes down to the person handling the closing. So if we can be more specific on number 10 and indicate who is the closing agent at, for example, Fidelity or at First American or at WFG, that would be very helpful in making sure that your customers are taken care of and taken care of in the right way. Closing date is usually okay. Some people can write on or before. What that means is that the buyer and seller would have to agree if it's before that date. So, for example, if we wrote December 25th, can't be on the 25th because that's Christmas, but if we wrote December 25th on or before, the agreed-upon closing date would have to be agreed upon by both the buyer and seller in writing for that to be December 20th or December 19th. So you may want to consider that, adding that if you're not really sure on the closing date or if your buyer is flexible on the closing date so that the seller can, in essence, help you select the closing date. I've seen people write that in next to the date, and that's perfectly legal and perfectly fine. Also on the number one thing I get questions about is the number 13 on services of closing agent for payment, charges and assessments levied before but due after closing. It's in the buyer's favor to ask the seller to prepay in full by seller at closing. It's in the seller's favor to assume by buyer. So depending on who you represent, it's a constant battle sometimes to determine what assessments could be due after closing or before closing, and who would be responsible for those fees. If it's assumed by buyer, there could be some homeowner dues, there could be a light post that's going to be installed by the city, there could be a sewer capacity charge in King County because it's a newer home that was built after 1990, and that would be a capacity charge. And if it says assumed by buyer, that means that the buyer would need to pay that. That would be a closing cost assumed by the buyer. If it's prepaid in full by seller, that means the seller would be paying for that. So there are certain circumstances where I've seen listing agents try to pull a fast one, so be careful when they counter you on Term 13 or you check the wrong box and you say assumed by buyer, there might be some hidden fees that come along the transaction that you may not be prepared for. So work with your escrow company to find out what those fees would be before closing, so there's not some big surprise at the end. And just realize that prepaid in full by seller at closing is in the best interest of the buyer, not the seller. Okay? And then make sure all the addenda are filled out. 22A, 22D, all of the addenda in Term 16 are listed as the addenda. We don't need to list Form 17. We don't need to list legal description. Those are already assumed. But the addenda would be the term numbers, the 22A, 22D, 35, 22K. Those are your typical ones that you would be using. A lot of people ask me about 22T. There'd be only certain circumstances where I would use a 22T, but it's a simultaneous contingency if you're using a Form 35. So it might not be necessary. It might be a redundancy. However, if there's a concern about title and you want a clean way to back out using the title contingency, you can certainly use 22T. If you're looking for a way to write up a cash deal, but still have time to review the title contingency and back out with cash, have a way out, a 22T would be very appropriate in certain circumstances, but just realize it's another contingency. And so if you're in a multiple offer situation, it's another way for the buyer to back out. So be careful about how you use it. And if you have questions about a specific circumstance, certainly come to me, and I'll be happy to educate you on why or why not you should use that contingency. Okay, so next week we'll talk about inspections, and I've got a really cool program you guys will like, an inspector that's provided me with a report that you can manipulate. So if you are excited about a new feature that I just came across that really will help you in negotiating inspections, you may want to jump on next week's conference call so you can see the visual. I will put up a visual, and we'll be discussing the Form 35 and the 35R next week. Thanks so much for jumping on the call. Have a great week. And as always, I'm here to help you if you need some support. You can email me directly at Rachelle, R-A-C-H-E-L-L-E, at bestchoicerealtywa.com. Talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.